Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another Motor Tapu podcast special brought to you by Team CP, your endurance coaching specialist. Angus Petrie, of course, and alongside me, as always, our team captain, Richard Greer. Welcome, Rich.
Good stuff, Angus. We're talking mountain biking tonight. How good? Just good fun. Looking forward to having an adventure on the mountain bike.
Well, we are indeed. Of course, we're talking Motor Tapu, that most fabulous race held down there in Central Otago. And when we talk mountain bikes, we're going to talk about two mountain bike races, don't we?
Yeah, we do indeed. Which is...
You're right? What?
No, I'm just excited about mountain bikes. You carry on with you're doing a great job.
Lindu Bay to Arrowtown across some of that famous land that you can only access during this one weekend of the year, and then the newly introduced last year Coronet Peak Loop, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a background. Have you ridden the Coronet Loop? Have you done the mountain bike through the Motor Tapu Valley? What have you done, Angus?
Done the old through the Motor Tapu Valley a few times, mate. Yep, for sure. And haven't raced the Coronet Loop yet. Have not raced it. Have done bits of it, as we were talking about backstage before, and some other events. It's a fantastic loop up there. That's, you know, that probably, I don't know, I'm just weighing up, where do you go? Like, on this coming Motor Tapu weekend, where do you go? Right. Do you go for the old faithful, or do you do this beautiful Coronet Peak Loop, mate?
That's right. Well, it's always an adventure, and you don't know what you're going to get weather-wise, et cetera, how the grass is growing across the summer, et cetera, and how fast the course is running. Like, for me, it's, do you go back and try and improve your time after doing the Motor Tapu a few times, or you just go and have another adventure somewhere new? So, I'm definitely pretty keen to have a bit of a look and an adventure around that new Coronet Loop that was only opened a year or so ago.
Yeah, well, actually, if you talk about it that way, then I'm probably heading for the Coronet, because there's just no way in my current state that I would beat my best time around there, probably. So, although there is something cool about that, you know, Glendu Bay start and through across the tops and down Soho and through the rivers and all of those sort of things. It's still a bloody good day out, really.
That is a really good day out, isn't it? And one to be soaked in and appreciated. I've done it on a number of different ways and bits and pieces, as we'll talk through this podcast. But I guess it depends on how you're looking to approach it. We're going to talk to four different guests tonight, actually. We're going to talk to Kim Hurst, who won the inaugural Coronet Loop last year. So really looking forward to finding out about sort of her experience and learnings from the trail for the first time around last year, and what she's got to share with us. We're going to talk to Kate Booth, who joins us to discuss the e-bike category, which is definitely a real up-and-coming one, and really gives that accessibility to this ride to a whole nother category of rider, which is really, really cool. And what it takes to ride your e-bike through there, because it's not easy to do. So that's...
I want to know what it takes to carry it through the river.
Yeah, well, I'm really interested to see how that one goes as well. So that's my key, but how what's that about? We're going to talk to Josh Morris from Mundraker, who's the title sponsor for the mountain bike event through the Motor Tapu Valley. So have a chat about bikes and what happens when you run your e-bike through the river, if you find a deep spot, etc. But first, we're going to have a chat to Brett Jardine, who's on the line. He's a serial entrant. He's been to the Motor Tapu mountain bike pretty much every year so far. And we're pretty excited to see what it means to him and why he keeps coming back for more year after year after year. How are you getting on, Brent?
Yeah, good. Thanks, guys.
Welcome. What a history you have at this event, eh?
Yeah, I've done it a few times. I've actually done it 16 times. I didn't ride this year. I had a back injury, but I went up as support crew for my partner Julie, who rode it. So, yes.
Would have been tricky, I'd imagine, being on the other side of the fence this time around. That would have been tough for you.
It was a bit strange. Yep, definitely a bit strange. Yeah, did want to be out there riding.
Yeah. But that's still a pretty good effort. 16-1, that's not a bad sort of scorecard.
Yeah, not too bad. No, not too bad. I actually did it once in the old days. I used to have a race in the opposite direction. So,
Did it go back? The next day, no, that was another race they used to go backwards, actually.
No, I think that was something else.
It was.
Right, okay. Tell us about, give us a bit of background, Brent. Let's sort of wind the clock back a little bit. How long have you been riding your mountain bike for? And why did you sort of line up for that Motor Tapu the first year?
Riding the bike for a long time, different bikes, different, you know, racing bikes or cycle touring or different things in the old days. Why did I line up the first year? I think just because it's such an exciting part of New Zealand to get to get through, you know, and it's a real privilege to be able to ride through that country. That was probably why. I guess it sort of feels a bit like your backyard when I live in Dunedin, so Central Otago's a bit of your backyard, really. So, you know, riding between Wanaka and Arrowtown's pretty special. So that was the attraction the first year, I guess.
Yeah, nice. And it is very cool, isn't it, riding between those two points? From it feels like a long way on a map in terms of driving a car, getting from one place to the next. So, yeah, very cool to be able to do. In terms of you and how you're going, like you mentioned, you had a bit of a back injury. What are the chances of standing on the start line for your 16th go at the event?
So I've entered for 24. So, yep, no, all should be good. Plan to ride it again.
Nice work.
Yeah, good. So a few more to do yet, I think.
Yeah, excellent. So I'm sure you would have visualized the course last year, especially when you weren't able to make it. Would you be able to describe it for us? Talk us through what that start line feels like, what those first sort of gravel roads and the few ups and downs and things to get us underway, all the way through to finishing at Arrowtown.
I think the start line's pretty special, you know. You have 2,000 people with their mountain bikes lined up. That's a pretty neat sight. Just to see so many people out there with their bikes gonna go and enjoy themselves for the day. So the start line's good. You know, the key thing's just starting the right wave, I think, for the start. People go a bit crazy on those first couple of K up the gravel road, but really it's just time to settle in and get used to it before you start the hills. And there is plenty of hills in it. I think that's something that probably catches newcomers by surprise, but it's a great course and it's pretty much all rideable. There's one little steep pinch that I've probably never ridden. I think I've ridden everything the rest of it though. And eventually you get to the high point. Takes a long time to get there. You're about two thirds of the way through, I guess. And then you get to enjoy some pretty neat downhill. And then I think the highlight for me is the river crossings. After you've come down Soho Descent and get to the Arrow River and you get those Arrow River crossings. You know you're getting close, but there's still a bit of work to do there.
That's right. It's quite technical, isn't it, those river crossings? And that's part of the fun as a mountain biker, sort of to see if you can pick your route across. Is that sort of part of it for you?
Yeah, definitely. Some years I've ridden them. Some years the river's been a little higher. Usually I'll try and ride them. Definitely.
And any tips? Because it's a bit different. It's not just a sort of straight river crossing that you just blast straight across, is it? You sort of need to pick your line a little bit. Is there any tips for others there in terms of those river crossings?
You can watch the people ahead of you and see whether they've got the right line or not. Trying to pick what's under the water. Often it's really clear and you can actually see and avoid those big boulders that are going to stop your front wheel. Just pedal. Just keep pedaling.
Low gear, and just keep those legs spinning as you go through there.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, and it's amazing, isn't it? If you just keep trying to keep moving, it's amazing what you can do, bumping around and sort of, oh, no, I'm still kind of riding my bike, I haven't fallen off yet.
Yeah. We talked about it on the previous episode of this Motor Tapu season and our run, and it's similar to the mountain bikes as well. You know, you need to let that current, you need to start high and go, you know, go on the high side and just let the bike drift as it comes across with that current, if possible, you know, as well, like without falling in that big dreaded hole.
Yeah, certainly if you're carrying your bike, you need to think about the current. I always find if you're carrying your bike, and that's maybe because it's a little deeper, that you feel the current more. You want to have your bike on the downriver side when you're going through there. Going with the current. Never thought about that too much actually. I'm usually just trying to pick the line and ride through.
I always
maybe
just find
Angus that... is.
Yeah, good tactic, sorry, I like that.
Well, no, I do. I mean, like, I'm normally looking for the shallowest part I possibly can. Obviously, so normally where there's a bit of a ripple going on and things, normally trying to get that shallow point. But every now and then when you sort of bounce a rock in the wrong way or something like that and you start to you know, sort of lose your way. Sometimes a turn with the current, just let it try and get some momentum just to keep the thing going against trying to fight it anyway.
Hmm. And I think the other thing with those river crossings is often like four-wheel drives go in and out of there, and there's a sort of rock bank kind of thing. So don't just dash straight across. You can sometimes go down the track a little bit and then sort of take your line across. So keep an eye out for, as Angus said, where it is shallower, and then also sort of maybe don't go just straight across. You can sometimes go down the line a little bit and then across. And as you mentioned there, Brent, just learning from others is a really good trick as well, where people are going. Brent, have you ever fallen off in those river crossings trying to do it? I'm good, and then not good, I'm very wet all of a sudden.
No, not in the river crossings. Not in this race. No, I've stopped a couple of times. I've hit that rock, but usually managed to get a foot down in time.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm touching some wood for you. Well, hopefully I haven't put the hex on you for next year. Nice work. And in terms of I guess tips for others in regards to training, how do we approach this ride? You mentioned there's actually more uphills than it looks like on the contour map. You live in Dunedin. What are some of the things that you do to help you prepare?
So there's plenty of hills in Dunedin, but I think you want to ride some hills so you're prepared for it, so you can enjoy it, because it is hilly. It's not a super technical course, I don't think. So just get out on hills. I mean, I ride the Waitati circuit in Dunedin, which local bikers or runners will know well. It's a gravel road and sealed road circuit. It's got a couple of good hills in it. So, yeah, hills and hills and more hills, I think, is the key for it.
Yeah, that's good advice. Hills are just hard. There's nowhere to hide when you start riding up some hills. Keep you pretty honest. Is there any particular section that keeps you up at night to think, oh, maybe I need to do a bit more training?
The hills make me think I need to do a bit more training. It doesn't keep me awake because, I mean, as I say, most of it's rideable. Yeah. For most riders, it's not too daunting in that respect. You mentioned earlier about the length of the grass, though. If they've had a good summer up there, a wet summer, and that grass is growing in places on the track, it's like, oh dear, this is hard work.
I remember that from my very first attempt at MotoGP, that you sort of, you know, think, oh, this is not actually so bad. I was pretty fit and could roar up the hills and do all those sort of things, and then really got bitten by that grass section up the top. Actually, it really, you know, I remember that day going, shit, this is something I hadn't actually thought about to put into my mental plan there, that this grass was actually going to be pretty draggy.
Yep, you're looking at your bike thinking, am I brake sticking or what's going on here? It's feels like someone's got the handbrake on, doesn't it? Once you get to that stage, you know the top's not too far away.
Mm-hmm. So, Brent, I'm interested that 16 events that you've done, there must have been a bit of change. The course is essentially the same the way through there, but bikes must have changed incredibly. You're obviously not quite at the e-bike thing yet, but were you on a steel frame, an alloy frame? Did you have suspension on that very first one?
No, started on an alloy frame Vanti hardtail. Rode that for quite a few races. And enjoyed that. Eventually went to dual suspension, and buying a new bike was a good move because that was actually my fastest time. But it took me
good.
I think it took me 9 years to break 3 hours. So yeah, that was good. Last few rides, I've actually gone back to riding a hardtail, but it's a carbon hardtail, so it's a bit lighter and it rides nicely. Yeah, some of the technology's changed a bit. You know, in the old days, everyone used to have the old V brakes on their bikes, and you'd be hard pressed to see one with V brakes there now. It's
a lot of
things better and better. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Brent. Any other tips for others that are lining up to the Mototapu for the first time? They haven't seen it before. They're like, "Yep, I'm going to go and have a crack at that." What tips would you give them?
Take your time and enjoy it. Have a look around because it is pretty spectacular. Yep. Can get pretty hot through there. Definitely make sure you've got your nutrition sorted. I can go through a fair bit of fluid through there on some days.
Yep.
You never really know what the weather's like though, so So make sure you have got all your gear with you. Done it at least once in the rain, and that made it pretty slippery. So, yeah, definitely take all your gear with you.
Nice. What about broken chains? Is that something that you've come across in your experience?
First-hand experience. 1 year I broke my chain twice. Struggled to repair it the first time. I'd actually managed to bend a few links. Definitely a driver error, trying to change gear as I accelerated out of one of the weak creeks as it stood up on the pedals. So fixed that and then carried on, and another 10K or so later, it broke again. So after that, I got really nervous, actually, in terms of, geez, I hope this bike's going to make it home. So I started to just take it gently.
Like a ballet dancer on the pedals.
Yeah, just take it easy on some of those little sharp little pushes. I guess the key to it is you know, have your bike in good nick, but know how to use your gear you got with you as well.
And you said it was user error, so that is a thing, isn't it? There's lots of little down and ups, especially towards the end, that often you're coming in with pace with a high gear and you're like, oh, I'm in a high gear, I'm just going to whack this down a few. You put the power down and then all of a sudden, bing, goes your chain. I've done that as well. Got a little bit keen and enthusiastic.
Yeah, it was on one of the earlier creek crossings, so yeah, okay. It was, but exactly that, yep. Just a bit eager, just not really thinking about it.
That's right. Yeah, well, I'm pleased you were able to finish and didn't have to go runner bike style to get across the finish line. That's good.
Yep, definitely good.
Yep. Excellent. Well done, Brent. Well done. Thank you so much for joining us. All the best for your training and getting yourself organised, and look forward to seeing you at the upcoming event to line up for 47Ks of mountain biking, 800 vertical metres of climbing, and a great big high five as you cross the finish line.
Thanks, guys. See you there.
Awesome. Thanks, well done, Brent.
Cheers. It makes a good point. We should talk about that too, and I know we've got Josh coming on, but maintenance, we talk about this all the time. Rolling up to an event, to a start line with a well-maintained bicycle is key to a happy day, that's for sure. But actually something that's really important, I always find after this event, is actually the post-race maintenance, and that is, I can't recommend enough, taking your bike into the bike shop and getting the bottom bracket stripped out. And getting it cleaned out. Those water crossings that we do have to go through, it gets in everywhere. It does get inside the bottom brackets of your bike, and left alone, you'll end up with a rusty, horrible old collapsing bottom bracket.
That's right. It doesn't take much, and bike shops will do it pretty quickly for you, so it's a really important thing to do. And as you say, like, that's the main reason why people won't actually finish this race, is because their bike underneath them isn't really up to standard for a start. So it doesn't need to be a new one. It just needs to be just get a quick service on it and make sure everything's running well, and then you'll increase the chances of having a smile on your face and enjoying your day out.
What caught you out the first time, first couple of times you did it? What, you know, I know that grass, it certainly caught me out up the top there. I had no idea what was coming. And I like to tell everybody about that section nowadays, because, you know, it's just, it's probably one of the ones that suck the most energy. But what about you? Is there anything that caught you out?
Oh, I think the first year I did it, I actually did it as the triathlon. So I was just stoked that I was alive from the swim, to be honest. I was just having a happy day. And I was way down the back of the pack too. So that also helped me. So I just had a great time. I did have one of my toughest experiences with the year that it rained, and it rained and rained and rained, and I got through sort of before people got cut off and the river rose and rose, and you're crossing the river at sort of almost waist height, and you had to have your bike downstream, as you said, because it's kind of floating away from you, and got down to the very last river crossing. I was like, oh, well, let's just go and have a crack at this. I'm just having some fun here. I was riding well, rode halfway across, and all of a sudden my front wheel went into the ditch. You might have heard this in other events as well, over the handlebars. But this was different because my bike started floating away down the river. So here I am racing down the river to try and catch the thing. Because it floated quite well with its tires and stuff pumped up. Managed to grab it with a bit of a cheer from the crowd as I dragged my very wet, butt out, and managed to roll across the finish line. Actually, I was dressed up as Awesome Guy that year as well, which I'm sure helped.
Not the first time you've been upside down in a creek, is it?
It isn't. So yeah, there's lots to think about, and as I say, the weather can throw a few curveballs, which makes it definitely interesting.
Good. All right, should we carry on? There's plenty of people here. Plenty of good buggers that we've still got to get through today on our podcast. What are we doing next? We're going to Kate, are we? We're bringing Kate Booth on. And this is about our e-bike section, about the e-bike section, which is, what have we had, 2 years of e-bikes or something, I think?
Something like that. Yeah, it's limited to 300 riders. So so you make sure you get your entry in. Fantastic way to make the Motutapu Valley accessible for everybody, effectively, isn't it, to be out there and enjoying the spectacular scenery.
Yeah, and I suppose what we want to do is, if you're thinking about taking an e-bike, is that this is a recreational part of it, right? Like this isn't the, I'm going to go and wind it up to however many watts my e-bike will put out on full battery and blast my way across it and get around. This is really designed as for what e-bikes have become so well known for, enabling people to be able to get out amongst the great outdoors and do these things. And Kate, you successfully went from A to B on your e-bike last year.
Yes. Oh, it was. Had a great experience. Actually, it was heaps and heaps of fun. Yeah, loved it.
Had you done it before?
No. Hadn't done it before. No. I'd biked. When I've been down there, I've biked like from Queenstown through Barrowtown and things like that, and done all those tracks. But I hadn't done like the off-roading on like Motutapu. It was just such a great track. It was just fantastic.
Good stuff. And how did you get involved in sort of signing up for this event? Obviously, you've been down there and sort of did a bit of riding, but it's a bit of a step, isn't it, of lining up for the Motutapu itself?
Yes, I think my husband has done it a few years ago. I think he's done it a couple of times, but that was on a real bike, not an e-bike, a few years ago. Yep. And then, they put their name down and we were lucky enough to get into the 300 that were doing it. Was Craig and I and our sister-in-law Rachel and brother-in-law Trevor, so the four of us, and we just had such a great day. It was hilarious. Yeah,
fantastic. Had you completed any events before the Motutapu?
No, not mountain biking events like that. No.
Yeah, excellent. So that was the first time, and have you done any other events since, or is this sort of the one on your calendar?
Yeah, just one on the calendar. We want to do it again next year weather was, it was just such a great day. The weather was amazing and, yeah, the atmosphere throughout it, everyone was cheering and having a good laugh, and you stop on the side of the road and, you're having a break and, you chat to the people that are having a break beside you, or you're cheering the ones that are zooming along beside you, or, yeah, nuts. Yeah. It was great. Had a good day.
Fantastic. And speaking of chatting and taking it all in and that support, those Motutapu aid stations are pretty awesome, aren't they? Did you stop at any of them of them? Yeah. Or what was your favourite run?
Yeah, had a chat, had a break. Yeah, we weren't in a race, you see, so we're just like, ambling along. Oh, let's have a drink here and have this, It's good.
Is there any
running away and where are you from and everything like that, so it was good.
Good. Was there any that you'd recommend in terms of they had the chocolate brownie, so I'm making sure I'm stopping at aid station 3? Is there any highlights of the aid stations we need to be aware of?
No, not that I recall, no.
I don't know that I've actually stopped at a Motutapu aid station. Maybe I should, maybe this year I might put that on my list of things to do, Rich.
I think that's a great idea.
Maybe like a definitely food quality inspection.
You've got to try it every little piece. That's fantastic. How did you go with those river crossings at the end? We talked to Brent about them before in regards to how he tackles them. How did you go on your e-bike?
The first ones we sort of just I held back and watched what other people were doing and where they were going, and a lot of them were still on the proper bikes, not the e-bikes. And the first few ones were quite shallow, so we were just picking our way across and biking through them. And then when we got to the ones that are a little bit deeper, we pulled it up, and so you're just walking it through on the back wheel and just figuring out where to go and not to avoid the big rocks so you don't fall over and things like that.
Yep. That's awesome. Yep. And I guess that's all part of taking your time, isn't it? And picking the right line to make sure you get through and stay upright.
Oh, gosh, sorry, the home printer's going. Sorry, the home printer's going.
Oh, sorry. That's okay. How much battery did you have left when you got to the finish line, Kate? Did
all four? I still had 34% battery left when I finished. Yep.
Right. And the other boys, what they
have? Yeah. Oh god, hold on. What is Craig printing? All right. Sorry, someone's printing something. I still had 34% left, but Craig and Trevor, I think we're about 5 or 6K to go from the end, and they'd both run out. So Craig jumped on my bike and I jumped on his bike with no battery. So I biked a couple of K on his bike with no battery and he jumped on mine. And his is a bit bigger than me. So I'm like, yeah, biking on his bike. So we're just all just laughing away like that. It was just, yeah. And I said, right, so give me funny. My bike back for the last. I'm biking on my bike across the finish line. So it's got my number on it.
That's awesome. I'm sure that involves some form of punishment, doesn't it? Or beer to be bought for you, something along those lines.
I think it was 52K. I think my bike said at the end of it. I'd done 52 kilometers.
Nice. I'm curious for next year. Assuming you'll all four of you will be there again next year, will you?
Yes. Yep. Yep. And
curious.
Is your wife Sandra doing it? Is she doing it on an e-bike or a real bike?
Well, actually, I'm not sure. That's actually just every time we talk about something on this podcast, it learns to be. So we better leave that alone or I'll be in a lot of trouble, but I'm hoping she will. I'm curious though, will your brother-in-law Trevor, will he have a basket on the front for Teddy?
Yeah. Well, we can't have a trailer. I don't think we won't go through up and down the hills on the trailer, so we have to do a basket or a backpack. Teddy on a backpack.
Teddy is their dog and has been known to parade around the shores of Lake Wanaka. Not by walking much, just as it is. So a bit of an in-joke, but just thought we'd see whether Teddy may make an appearance across there on an e-bike. But how did you find it technically to ride the MotoGP?
Well, I didn't find it actually too hard at all. I was sort of trying to challenge myself and, you know, hit it only on eco as much as I could. And then, Ali, I'm on the computer. Can you just stop printing? Thank you. Sorry about that. I tried to challenge myself, and then they were, like Craig and Trevor, were sort of having it on boost a lot more than I had it on boost. And so I was like tailing Charlie, and they'd wait for me at the top of the hill and things like that. But I'm like, oh, so then I'd sort of put it into boost mode and get up to the top and have a little rest. But, yeah, I didn't find it too, technical at all. I knew the grass was quite hard. That was, like not hard, but, like as you're biking through, you think, shivers, you're not really getting very fast, are you? But it wasn't hard. It was just going to put a bit more slog into it.
Yeah.
And then coming down, I'm like, I don't mind going uphills. I'm good at going uphills. But then coming down, and I was like more wary of the real bikes, like the professional guys. And I was like, trying to stay out of the way of them, like, because they're like boosting it downhill and I'm a bit more cautious going downhill and things like that. So I was like staying out of their way and just taking it easy going down the hills.
And nice. How did you find that? That is a tricky thing, isn't it, for others riding their bikes in terms of, you're just trying to do your thing, but then you've got these other faster people coming past you. Was that okay? Like, how did you find
I like
that?
To be polite and sort of pull over to the side, and everyone goes, oh, don't mind what's coming on behind you, but I don't want to hold people up or anything like that. And then other times you get to the top of the hill and then someone's stopped or they've, something's happened. You think, oh, gosh, you don't want to crash into them. So you're sort of, going around them and things like that. But, I'm more wary of what other people are doing and I don't want to hold them up. So I sort of pull to the side and things like that. Nice.
And that's great. That's awesome to do that. But I guess the main thing from your perspective also is just to make sure that you hold your line and do your thing, and it's up to other people to make their way past you, because it is a double track sort of thing ride through. So
you feel like you're cheating when you're on the e-bike and you're like biking past the people going, and they're like slogging it up the hill, and you're going, "Hi, I'm just biking past you now." You sort of get a bit embarrassed. I'm like, "Oh, sorry, excuse me."
But you must have been good to give them a bit of enthusiasm, a bit of cheering on. That's definitely what.
Everyone was in such good. You pass the same people, like they were on real bikes and we're on e-bikes, and we'd get to the top of the hill and we'd stop with Trevor and Rachel and Craig and have a chat, and then we'd go past the same people. Oh, you again? Hurry up! We'd sort of banter with the same people for a few kilometres, awesome. And so it was good.
Yeah, that's great.
It was good.
That's
awesome. Like everyone's just like chatting along the whole track. It was lots of fun.
Good stuff. And have you got any tips for others lining up for the mountain bike on their e-bike for the first time around?
We sort of packed a lot of water, but then there are the aid stations that, have the water and things like that. So, and it was more like make sure you've got your warm clothes because you can always strip off. But we were lucky enough because it was a lovely sunny day and things like that. But we probably didn't take enough like little muesli bars and things like that to have a little snack at.
Well, maybe you need to have a look at that chocolate brownie that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I know. I do.
Yeah, put that down on the list of make sure you find it for next time around.
Yeah, stop. Yeah, yeah, they need to hold up a sign. Lolly slice, chocolate brownie, stop here.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And are you going to do any training rides in the lead-in? Because making sure you're going to be comfortable on your bike is a big part of it as well, isn't it? Like your day can get a bit uncomfortable in terms of sitting on your seat or your shoulders, etc., on your bike. Do you sort of get out and do a few long rides beforehand?
Yeah, normally, yeah. No, well, I don't like to, we normally just sort of do some 20Ks and things like that. But I mean, because you're not going the 50K like straight, you know, you're stopping and things like that. You're not in a race. I guess a lot of the people, they're on the time things when they're on the real bikes and they've got, you know, times to beat. But we're just like out for a Sunday stroll, really, you know. So you're getting on and off your bike. I mean, at the end of it, you're a little bit sore. But I mean, the next day we could all walk. We weren't like, you know, dying because we'd pushed our bodies to extreme. It's a lot more casual, I think, when you're on an e-bike than on a real bike.
No, that's right. I think you need to stop calling it a real bike because e-bikes are awesome. They're real bikes as well.
Oh, they're just heaps of fun. Like, I've clocked up quite a few kilometres all around the Wanaka and Queenstown, all the tracks and trails. They're just fantastic down there. It's absolutely, they're so well maintained. It's amazing what you can do and where you can go.
And that was my last question, actually. You've gone and ridden the Motutapu on Saturday. Do you head out and go for another ride the next day?
No, I know, because we're from Palmerston North, so we sort of had to pick up our bikes and hit the road come back again. Right. Yeah, and then you can't put your bikes on an aeroplane, so we've got a car down there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Travel down by car.
Nice work.
Yeah.
Well done, Kate. Love the commitment. Love the fact that you've got out and having an awesome adventure, and also love the fact that you'll be back in 2024 to go and suss out that chocolate brownie. I'm just checking to see if Gemma's typing anything in regards to
that. Gemma nodding that there is going to be brownie. There is now, officially. Officially, there is now brownie.
There's going to be brownie. Just a couple of little slices.
Yeah. They may have Kate Booth written on them, like, don't touch Kate Booth. There might only be...
Yeah, set aside. But we did get we got our bike service when we got home because, you know, going through all those water channels and things like that with the e-bike. So we got home and we took the batteries out. And then when we got home, we took them into... we go to Adam at Central Bike Studio and he, you know, serviced them all, so make sure everything was tickety-boo with all the batteries and things like that. You don't want to wait around getting them serviced after they've gone through all that water. Yeah.
Yep. Good stuff, Kate. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. Love the enthusiasm and look forward to sharing the Motutapu course with you in a few months' time and going to suss out that chocolate brownie.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Well done. Thanks,
Kate. Okay. See ya.
Thanks, Kate.
Bye.
See ya.
I think I sort of said it, didn't I? They become enablers, these e-bikes, haven't they? You know, like so many people out there, my parents included, not racing the Motutapu, but are out on mountain bikes nowadays because they can, because of what e-bikes are enabling people to get out and do.
Yeah.
And to be able to include them and allow people to get through like the iconic Motutapu is just fantastic of the event to allow this to happen.
It's just exactly right. And it's really good to hear Kate sort of talking about the fact that on her e-bike, she found that the course wasn't tricky. She was able to ride it fine and enjoy a day out. As I say, it's like it's not a competitive section of the event, but just a great time. Just go and cheer each other on. There's a whole bunch of banter going on, obviously, and especially pretty funny when a couple of e-bikes run out of battery towards the end. So it is a management job, isn't it?
Yeah, I wonder if they'll do better this year. I wonder if they'll be a bit leaner on the fuel economy.
Absolutely. I just want to have a quick chat around training for this the Motutapu mountain bike ride as well. Just in terms of things like making sure that you're preparing well, making sure that you're quietly improving the volume that you're riding, the amount that you're riding, and ultimately looking to simulate what you're going to do on race day. We talked a wee bit about hills are super important, but that simulation comes around your nutrition and your pace and how fast you're looking to ride your bike. So prepare yourself, mind, body, nutrition, etc. So then you can have a really good day out on the Motutapu course and decrease the chances of getting cramp, etc. as well.
Yeah, I mean, you got plenty of time. March, when I say plenty of time post-Christmas. March is a few months after Christmas, so you do have a bit of time to get rid of Christmas pudding straight afterwards. But you're right, volume is one thing, just those consistent rides. And at the end of the day, what you really want to do is make the day as comfortable and as fun as you can along the way. And it's probably going to hurt somewhere along the line and might be a little bit of cramp or or, you know, there might be a I don't want to go up this hill anymore type moment. But the more you do now, the better that day will become.
Absolutely. And it does make the make that finish line even more satisfying, doesn't it? If you do have a bit of hurt and a struggle and a bit of a grimace going on. And we talked about that grass section as well. I think one of the key bits of that is it's the same for everybody. There's probably a headwind across there as well, most probably. So it's just a matter of keeping on. Keep in the moment. Don't get ahead of yourself and keep doing your best. And hey, if you need to distract yourself by looking up at those fantastic mountains and maybe those ultra runners high up on the top of the hills, thinking about those as well, saying, actually, this mountain bike ride isn't so bad after all.
Yeah, and actually, Rich, probably a really good segue just to put a little plug in here for Team CP, who are bringing this podcast to you all. You can get yourself a training plan through Team CP or on the Motor Tapu website, some of the magazine options that you've got available.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess we've got a bit of something for everybody at every level. So we've got those Mototapu magazines that are sitting there on the website. So that and that's a guideline to follow in terms of that whole volume build thing. If you want a little bit more support, we've got our training plan membership, which is an online. Hey, here's your plan. You can move it around, make it yours. There's a whole bunch of video content behind that as well. I've been through the mountain bike and the run and the ultra and sort of across a couple of years and then sort of just filmed a whole bunch of the course. So that's a really good way to kind of get a bit of a feel for things as you go as well, all the way through to, hey, if you want to sort of really see how good you can get and have a really enjoyable experience. We also do one-on-one coaching as well. So there's five of us in our coaching crew that work on the one-on-one stuff too. So all different levels, depending on where you're at and what support you need.
Got them covered, eh? Got them covered. Speaking of got them covered, how about our sponsor for the 47K mountain bike race, Mondraker? Josh from All Sports is joining us. Hello, Josh. How are you going? Oh, wait, I'll get him in there. There he is.
Good, guys. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Excellent, Josh. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, what we want to talk to you about is sort of some recommendations around mountain bikes, and we've got some specific things around river crossings. We've got four-wheel drive, but also want to talk to you a little bit about that Coronet Loop as well. So let's start off with the Mototapu Valley. That's what we've spoken so far about in the podcast. Tell us a little bit more about sort of what we should be looking for and what we should be thinking about in terms of our bike that we're lining up with.
So bike choice is a really interesting one because bikes now are so good, especially the Mondraker range. All the bikes pedal incredibly well, and you're going to get certain benefits if you go higher up the travel spectrum, and you're going to get certain benefits if you go to the more hardtail side of things. So I think what you'd want to think about as a rider who is going to do this course, which is, you know, 50 Ks and 900 meters of climbing or so on, is what kind of, if we imagine a graph and you have travel and comfort at one end, and then on your other axis, you have lightness, you have to decide where on this kind of x-axis you want to be. So if we look at the higher travel end of the spectrum, we have something called the Mondraker Raise, which is our aggressive short travel enduro bike. So this is 150 mil travel fork on the front and 130 mil travel on the rear. It's going to be a lot more forgiving and a lot more comfortable on the downhill. There's going to be a bit of a tax you pay in terms of the weight and the pedaling efficiency. That said, all the Mondraker bikes pedal incredibly well because of their zero suspension system. But this is going to be suited to maybe the more enduro rider who is better on the downhills, and you're not going to be making up the crazy places on the uphills anyway. So you want to maximize your skill set on the descents. So this is going to be a really solid option for that kind of rider. But maybe if you come from more of a cross-country background and you are comfortable with less travel or even a hardtail, the midpoint of what we would recommend is the new F Podium. So this is a 120 front travel and a 110 rear travel cross-country or World Cup cross-country bike. So incredibly light. You can get these down to 11 kilo-ish with the right spec. And that's going to be the best of both worlds in terms of you're going to have the comfort and the rideability to go and do 50 Ks and not feel incredibly sore, but you're also not sacrificing that much when it comes to pedaling efficiency and weight. For those people who are the hardcore cross country and they'd like to do 50k on a hardtail, you'd go for the Podium. So this is one of the lightest production frames ever made. So it's 775 grams just for the frame. So you can get bike weights in the sort of 8.5 kilo kind of mark with certain spec. This thing is going to be lightning uphill and lightning off the line. You're going to, again, there's going to be a tax. Everything's a trade-off, right? There's going to be a tax in terms of how confidence inspiring it is on the downhill when it gets a little bit more technical. But it can, yeah, it comes down to trade-offs and rider skill set as well. So it's, you know, do you want the comfortable bike that you can really attack on the descents, or do you want the super light bike where you can smash up the hills, but you might have to go a little bit steadier on the downs? Yeah, rider preference.
Yeah,
what if I want it all? Can I not have it all? Is that what you're saying? I can't have it all. Can't have my cake and eat it too. I could just train.
The mid ground is usually the better one. I think the F podium takes every box in terms of super light, incredible pedaling efficiency, but it has the Mondraker forward geometry, so it's going to descend incredibly well, and you've also got the suspension, so it's going to be comfortable and confidence inspiring on the descents. That's probably where I'd be leaning to. I'm more of an enduro focused rider, so I would just maximize my ability to go downhill fast, and then I'd let people pass me on the climbs.
Yeah. And it's exactly right, isn't it? It just comes down to your goals and what are you trying to achieve. And as you say, that mid-range bike basically does both, and it'll be right for just about everybody, unless you're super relaxed and chilling and want to have an awesome time on the downhill. But I think sometimes when you've got all that suspension on the downhill, it almost becomes a bit less fun because you can just go whop straight across it, can't you? Whereas something's a little bit twitchier, you do have to kind of think about your lines and think about how you're riding your bike a little bit as well.
Absolutely. There's definitely fun in kind of scaling down the capability of the bike and it then being all you. What they say is the simplest bike teaches you the most complex skills, which is why they try and start a lot of the downhill races as kids on BMXs, because they really learn how to move the bike underneath you, how to pump, how to jump, and how to manual. What you see is the riders that go straight to full suspension some of the time don't have the necessary skills built up from years of riding a hardtail that you might get from that. But it's a really interesting conversation around bike choice, because one bike for one person might not be the fastest option for another.
That's very good advice. And thinking about the Coronet Loop, that's almost double the amount of climbing, 1500 vertical meters, as they go up and down and up and down and around that lap. Is there any differences or any other things we'd look to consider? I think you've covered it pretty well in regards to the rundown you've given us so far.
So the Coronet Loop, it is considerably more climbing, but also it has more technical features than the traditional loop as well, which is something to bear in mind. So, I mean, my bike of choice would either be the F-Podium. I'd still stick with the full suspension because anything over like 30, 40 Ks on a hardtail gets pretty painful. But I'd still go with the full suspension. 120 mil up front is enough to deal with a lot of the rock and the more technical sections, but you're still not sacrificing a huge amount in terms of pedaling efficiency or weight. Mm-hmm. And that thing is still 11 kilos plus or minus 100 grams. So it's not a heavy bike at all, really. You can go where you want with it, really, but it's a super interesting conversation. Should you have a downhill bike?
Should we have a dropper post?
Oh, a dropper post. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a lot you can do with spec as well to dial your bike in for the certain courses. So with the Coronet Loop especially, what will come with the high end cross country bikes, the Podium and the F Podium, is you'll have remote lockout, which is going to make going up the climbs far nicer and much easier. You're going to have a huge efficiency advantage gained there. You can fit these aftermarket on other forks as well, so you'd be able to do it on the higher travel enduros if you really wanted to as well. But then it comes down to other things as well. You know, you've got tire choice. Do you go for the fast rolling super light cross country tire, which is going to be easier to go uphill? It's going to have less rotational weight. But then when you do encounter those technical rock sections, it's going to pinch easier, it's going to puncture easier. And then, you know, from a racer's perspective, a puncture on race day is way worse than just losing maybe 30 seconds up each climb because you've chosen a heavier tire or a slower rolling tread pattern. There's a lot of ways you can cook it.
Love it, Josh. Will you be on the start line 2024?
Oh, I'm super tempted now. So I live in Arrowtown, and Coronet is my local pedal around. So
fantastic.
No excuses then, is there? You live in Arrogance, no excuses.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Hey, thank you so much for your time, Josh. Some really good insights, and really enjoyed your comment around building those skills and managing your bike, etc. And also very good in regards to choosing the right bike for you, and that's also based around your goals and how you're doing that as well. So thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you on the start line and hopefully on the finish line as well come race day in a few months' time.
Awesome. Great to chat.
Well done. Cheers, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. Bye.
We do need to get better at that, Rich. We often do say we look forward to see you on the start line, and maybe we do need to say we will see you on the finish line as well a bit more often, too.
Yeah, we do. I guess we've just got the assumption that they've been on the podcast. They're probably going to make it.
Oh, that's right. I think we've got a 100% finish rate out of this podcast,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think we've had a commentator's curse on anybody yet.
No, we were touching some wood earlier on in this podcast already, though, weren't we? Exactly.
Yeah, I heard you're going to drop a post because you're getting old and you need it to be able to actually get a leg over the bike nowadays.
I am getting old. It does help me get on the bike, yes. But it does make me... it's just so much fun. I think a dropper post is one of those things from a technology perspective that's really helped improve riding over these last couple of years. It's been a real game changer, to be honest. I think if I was going to choose, I'd go dropper post before I went rear suspension in regards to riding, because it just gives you options around how you're riding. I really enjoy that. Also enjoyed Josh's comment about hardtails and less suspension, etc. Back in the old days when I had a fully rigid bike, was my first bike I ever owned, bumping around until I broke it, which is good fun.
Yeah, look, I've got in the wall hanging up here that my one that's got a dropper post on it never gets used hardly anymore. It's my enduro bike and I hardly ever ride it. My cross country bike still to this day, both my cross country bikes, my full sus, and it's a swear word to talk about other events on a podcast, but at the Waka the other day, still to this day, I'm not running a dropper post in that cross country bike. That's not to say there's probably more laziness from actually getting around.
trying to claim you're a purist.
But still, you know, you can ride. But I 100% agree with his comment about hardtails and things. And when I did used to ride occasionally, a bit more than once a week, I did run two bikes in a full-size mountain bike and a hardtail, and the hardtail for those shorter, faster races. But whenever I was sort of in training, I would always take the hardtail out and go and ride some trails on it, because it did teach you to pick lines. It taught you to be able to move the bike around a bit better and be a bit lighter on it and all those sort of things. And then when you swap back to the other one, well, it was even better, wasn't it? Like, you did all of those things, but also had the luxury of the armchair as well.
100%. No, that's awesome. Let's bring Kim Hurst onto the show. Speaking about riding fast on your bike, Kim Hurst is a former New Zealand representative cyclist. She was the Coronet Loop champion in its inaugural year last year, riding it at 3 hours, 34 minutes, and 34 seconds. She's also been out riding a bike around that Coronet Loop today. How are you getting on, Kim?
No, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Super good to be here, particularly hearing that there's podcast watts up for grabs, so that's good.
well, actually, Rich, I was just going to say that introduction probably is well short of probably where it needs to be.
Do you want to beef it up a little bit? Do you want to give
Actually, it's probably a whole podcast all on its own. Kim comes with some very large pedigree, starting from her junior days over in Britain. Many things that'd be good to chat with one day about. But let's talk Motor Tabu, Kim. Come on, what's that big log of wood you got in the background? Don't let the Hawke's Bay get their hands on it, but
it's a pretty good casual flex, eh? This
what? That is a good old log of wood.
The incredible trophy. It's hard to fit on the camera because it is that big, and it's made from a piece of the fencing that they removed when they originally made the trail. So that's a pretty cool story. So they dragged this out, made a piece of made a bloody impressive trophy with it, and I was surprised to bring that home last year, I have to say, but you know, very proud to.
We'll so take the trick that. Bring it home again and leave it at home.
Just casually find some random fencing when you're out riding around the backcountry.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, you've been out on the course today. We want to have a bit of a chat about that as well, this Coronet Loop, sussing that out. And you've also taken some photos. For those that are watching, we'll be able to have a look. For those that are listening, you're going to talk us through them as Angus is going to throw them up.
I hope I get this in the right order, Kim. But yeah, like a bit of prior reconnaissance. Looks like it was a stunning day down there today to be able to get out on the bike. What do we got here? Where is that?
Yeah, so this is at the top of Greengate Saddle. And it was a fantastic day. A little bit breezy, but that kept the temperature down. And it was quite cloudy. So that's nice because actually at this stage of the race last year, and I hadn't actually ridden the full loop last year because I was coming back from the great burnout of 2021, 2022, which it isn't as exciting a thing as you'd think with my Hutt Valley residence, certainly not murder related. But I hadn't got myself out around this backcountry until race day. And I thought at this stage of the game, the hardest bit is behind me, and I was really, really wrong. If you look at the map, at the course map before the event, you can see that actually a lot of the climbing is done. But when you hit this point, you've got a wicked fast descent right down through the valley, and then you're into Deep Creek, and that is a lot of work. So all I can say is make sure you leave your powder dry for that bit.
What about this? Oh God, look at that! That's a crack.
Yeah, magic, eh? And I mean,
where else there was did you get that?
Yeah, incredible. There was a New Zealand falcon flying around literally as I took this photo, and that is quintessential Central Otago backcountry right there. You actually head across that plateau in the background, and that's, you know, some pretty hard work, and then climb up gradually ascending on that bit that you see in the foreground. It's just breathtaking every step of the way, and I think that's the real win for me on this course. I've done lots of different races all over the world, and actually anything that's iconic is super special to race, and this is an iconic New Zealand ride that we get to race once a year, so get amongst it.
Not unusual for you to be doing a bit of New Zealand bird watching either, Kim.
No, I'm as I'm hitting my 40s, there are a number of things that I am extending myself to.
Is there an app for the bird, like the tree? Is there an app to tell what
there needs to be? Maybe that could be a new revenue stream.
Speaking of streams, got a little more fresh water there.
Yeah. So this bit, you're actually going to be hitting this in the opposite direction. I took the photo with the bike in this direction just to keep the drive side facing. But
quintessential photo things to do. Yep.
Yeah, there's...
Cranks aren't straight though. Valves, where are the valves in there, Kim? Can I see them?
So as you meander through here along by the creek, you're going to be treated to a variety of water features, some of which you've got to negotiate, which actually on a hot day is really nice. And it's really, really pretty through this bit. Still a fair chunk of work to go as you head through here. And then you're going to drop down to Seven Mile Hutt and then hit the Macetown Road, which I don't have a photo of.
What's our last one? Yeah,
so you're going to actually see this way earlier on. But it's my favourite spot. And it's one that you're going to want to remember because the great team at Mototapu put a sign up there saying highest point of the course reached. And there are 37 hairpins to negotiate on this climb from the valley floor after you've descended Hot Rod, which is in mint condition at the moment. Queenstown Trails Trust and QMTBC have just put a massive amount of work in on that. And then you climb all the way up down a Connell Climb, connector, and this is the top of Tradesman. But don't be fooled. This isn't, as I thought before, you know, the biggest part of the work is done. You've got a whole load of riding before you hit that finish line.
That's a great description, isn't it, of the course and what to look out for and what to think about. And you talk about a lot of climbing, Kim, and keep your powder dry as being some key tips by the sounds of things when we line up for this race.
Yeah, the start is, you know, usual man and bike start, a little bit chaotic, but actually pretty good. You go up Bush Creek, which again is really, really spectacular scenery. And I just wouldn't stress if you're behind someone who's going a little bit slower, because it really spaces out heaps after Hot Rod. And, you know, losing 30 seconds or something on that climb is going to make zero difference to your finishing time at the end of the day. I run a 30-tooth chain ring nowadays. Now I live in central Otago. That could be because I'm getting older and spending more time bird watching, but could also be because those climbs are long, and I think you're best having as good a range of gearing to keep your legs spinning lighter as you can. And actually, if you're running a smaller chain ring on the front, that will allow you to keep a slightly straighter chain line and keep the cassette choice at the back down a couple of bits towards the bottom of the block.
Nice work. That's awesome. Training tips, if we're lining this Coronet loop up, what would you say? What are some key things you want to be thinking about in the months leading up to this event?
I think, you know, most people aren't pro athletes, and most people are trying to juggle family and work and life as well. So I would just say consistency with your training. Don't try to stress too much if you miss a day or, you know, have to do slightly shorter training sessions than you actually really wanted to. I always found prioritizing the stuff that hurts the most is worth doing. So actually skipping the recovery ride is way better than skipping your interval session. If you do have to choose, say you've got five sessions in the week you want to get through and you can only do four of them, then actually dropping that recovery ride and having an extra rest day is probably the way to go. And time on your mountain bike, I think, would be the other thing. So, you know, it's easy to jump on the trainer or ride your road bike, but actually it's a man and bike race, and time on your man and bike is going to pay dividends. And it's the summer. Like, this race is really, really well positioned in the calendar for you to get out and have some really fun, epic summer adventures on your man and bike with mates.
I think you've summed it up perfectly there. Summer adventures, and effectively that's called training, isn't it? Without training. So get out and have some adventures and then turn up and have another fantastic adventure at the Mototapu as we explore this fantastic new Coronet loop that's on the cards for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're in for a treat. You know, it is a route that's available all year round, so you can come down to Queenstown and check it out. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to do that, then you're still going to have an absolutely amazing time. The event is super well run and really well signposted, so you're not going to have to stress about anything other than just enjoying the day.
Nice. I think I heard never skip coffee ride.
Yeah, I mean,
is that what you heard, Rich? That's what I heard.
I'm pretty sure that was under adventures, wasn't it?
I was writing down the training tips and never skip coffee rides. That must have been all I heard.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was thinking that I was probably liking the idea of the original iconic Mototapu mountain bike ride for next year, and then we opened with that photo, and it sort of started to change my mind. And then you started talking about climbing and some more climbing. I'm probably just still back over the hill at the other one. And then looked at the next photo, and I think I'm bloody close to changing my mind. I think just the outlook of that ride there is just absolutely incredible. And I think, Rich, I think maybe we could coronet this year.
I think he just needs to give himself an uppercut and sort himself out and commit, doesn't he, Kim?
Yeah, I think whatever you do, you're going to have a really great day. And I was really close to doing, because the first Mototapu I ever did was last year. And I was really close this year to doing the traditional route. My wife told me it was a bit of a cop-out to have the trophy sitting at home and take it back and, you know, not actually front up at the start line. But you know, there are lots of ways of doing it. You know, Matilda Reynolds, who's just won the Warnie 240k gravel race, insane, rode on the road out to Wanaka, stayed there, and then last year, and then rode the Mototapu back. There are heaps of ways to cut your adventure. And I think that's the great thing about this event, eh? You know, you can have the whole family along. Someone can run, someone can e-bike, someone can do the Coronet Loop. And at the finish, you've got friends and food and good times.
That's a perfect summary, just like that. Well done, Kim. And as you say, like, we can run as well. We can do a little bit of everything and all finish on that at that fantastic finish line environment. Sit down, share some stories, and chill out, relax for the rest of the afternoon, cheering everybody else home.
Yeah, the vibe at this event, I was really, really impressed with last year. You know, you had people just encouraging people along every step of the way. So you're going to probably make another couple of friends, whatever option you choose.
Fantastic.
Absolute terrific finish line environment, that's for sure. I remember that exactly from my first time going through there some years ago, arriving there to a very professional run event, and it shows right at the end, collecting your medal. Everyone loves to collect a medal to add to the medal tally, that's for sure. And then a nice cold drink and refreshment and plenty of good banter and stories. I do love the trading of stories afterwards. Is always, you know, is always good. Who's got the best story post their ride through? Luckily, mine are normally pretty boring and straightforward. Try not to own the best story, that's for sure.
Is anybody, or is people sort of phasing out? They're not listening anymore. Hey, guys, what about me over here, guys? No, hey, thank you so much for joining us, Kim. Really appreciate your enthusiasm. And thank you for doing that recce today as well for us. They were hot off the press, those photos that you're able to share with us. So putting the body on the line for the podcast, and those podcast watts are real. So go out and use those whichever way you want to, and look forward to cheering you across the finish line. Probably, actually, no, you'll be cheering me across the finish line after you've already finished. But that'll be still good. We'll see you there.
Perfect. See you there, guys.
See ya.
Thanks, Kim.
Cheers, Kim.
See ya.
Good job.
I think Coronet's on, mate.
I think it's on. It's, yeah, just fun riding your motorbike. That's the summary, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, what a way to fill a few hours in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What else can you do? Exactly. Hey, we've just got Josh on the line. We just want to have a little bit more of a chat to him about e-bikes. We missed that before. We talked a lot about suspension and bits and pieces and bike choice for the different events. But one key thing that we forgot to ask him about was e-bikes, river crossings. How do I manage that? What should I be thinking about when I'm lining up for the e-bike event?
Okay, so with the river crossings, it's an interesting one. I think modern e-bikes are so good, and especially with the Mondraker e-bikes. Are you familiar with the IP rating system?
Yes. Normal standard IP rating.
Yeah. So yeah, all the Mondraker bikes are rated to IPX5. So IPX1 or IP1 is rain proof, basically. And then 5 is suitable for low power pressure washing and then short-term submersion. So provided you're not getting your e-bike and holding it under the water for extended periods, you're actually pretty good if you have a modern Mondraker e-bike. I can't speak for other brands, but the technology has really come on in terms of the way they seal all the wiring in and just the build quality and the engineering that goes into them. So you are pretty safe generally. I think from watching videos of previous years, the river, it's not like people are up to their waist. It's kind of, 6 to 12 inches of water. And, you know, if you have the odd lay down, it's not ideal, but it's not going to ruin your day, I don't think.
Yeah. And that's really good advice, because that's, I think, one of the key things with this event is like, oh, I'm not sure if I should take my e-bike across this course, but actually it's completely fine. And exactly what Angus, you said earlier, is for everybody, they should take their bike into the bike shop and just get a double check, get a service, get the bottom bracket sort of opened up and re-greased, and away you go again. And just as important, exactly the same for your e-bike.
100%. You know, before and after prep is everything. And as a racer myself, if I crash and it's my fault, I'm more okay with it than if it's a mechanical failure because I've not checked something, or if something was about to wear out and it's just, you know, prepping for races can be full on and you can miss things, but definitely getting a second opinion and a proper bike shop to look over your bike pre-race is essential.
Yeah. Brilliant, Josh. Hey, anything else to add before we leave, rather than me sort of quickly cutting off like I did last time?
No, just, yeah, best of luck to everyone competing. It's amazing to see such a flourishing mountain bike community down here and just across the whole of New Zealand. As a Brit that's come over, I can't believe how good the sporting and competitive scene over here is. It's amazing to watch.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well done, Josh. We'll look forward to seeing you in March and enjoy riding your bike.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. Hey, Rich, what's the most important thing you could do right now? Well, not right now, in a few minutes when we've finished and everybody's finished listening to us, mate. What is the one single most important thing somebody could do if they haven't done it already?
Well, the first one is go to the Motutapu website and enter the Motutapu. And then you have to do it. And the next most important thing you do is tell everybody else that you've entered. So then you have to do it, and you can't sort of just accidentally pull out. Putting your money on the line definitely is a good little motivator, and circling the date in the family calendar to make sure it happens. We can figure out why second, can't we? But it's actually just making that commitment first up.
That's absolutely right.
It's not the why, it's the how. We can figure out how second. Yep, yep.
No, you're 100% right. Get on the Motutapu website, motutapu.com. Choose your event that you want to select, the event that you want to compete in on the 2nd of March in 2024. And lock and load it. Buy the T-shirt. Do all of those things all at the same time so that you're all geared up, ready to go. And then we can get you, Team CP, anybody out there, the whole mountain bike community or run community, can get you to complete this most wonderful event. And I really recommend putting Motutapu on your list of events to tick off over the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just a great environment. Central Otago is awesome, isn't it? Wanaka, Queenstown, Arrowtown. It's a great place to be. It's pretty accessible in terms of getting to with Queenstown Airport, and just a great environment. It's so good to talk to a variety of people on different sort of levels in terms of the event, from the we're stopping and giving each other high fives at the top of every hill climb with Kate, through to Kim, who's blasting around the course at 100 miles an hour and winning the thing, through to Brent, who has turned up and done every single one of them basically, and ridden every sort of type of bike just about as well, from his hardtail through to his full sus, through to his V-brakes and back again. So yeah, great event, something in it for everybody. And Angus is just about clicking on that enter button on the Coronet Loop, I see.
Yeah, no, I got my finger over here on the button ready to go, Rich. But no, I think, we can bang on about it hour after hour after hour. But if I really think about what it means, what event you're going to pick on a calendar, what do you need? Well, you need a quality route and the traditional Motutapu that's only available on that particular weekend. Let's face that, that's the only time each year you can actually ride that. So one, that's a tick there. Some fantastic New Zealand scenery, because New Zealand has some of the greatest scenery that there is. Tick. And one of the other most important things is the good vibe, right? Good vibe. There's, once you get past the nervousness of that cold morning start, if you're at Glendu Bay, you know, and it's often a bit brisk over that side of the hill there and everyone's a bit nervous and things and whatnot, then you're going to go through some hurt. You're going to go through that old pain barrier as you're out there on the course and maybe through a few, you know, whatever's going to be thrown at you. That vibe, when you hit that finish line, like I said earlier, you get that medal, you're free from the days, just to reminisce and go, damn, that was actually really good, wasn't it? And enjoy that similar like-minded banter that goes on all afternoon.
Mm. That's a great great description of vibe. Vibe on the start line through to the race, the high fives during, the helicopters flying above is part of vibe for me. And then also hanging out the finish line and just enjoying your weekend away. So that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and that's probably us, Rich. That's another Motutapu podcast in the bag there. It is an absolute pleasure to be supporting this event and being a part of it. I'm super looking forward to March rolling around this year and being amongst it. Rich, it's always a pleasure to sit side by side with you through these things and share the love that we have for outdoors and sports and events and all of those sort of things along the way, mate. I look forward to the next one.
Good job. Well done. And thanks for pushing the buttons, making the photos come up. As always, Angus, job done. Motutapu mountain bike. Over and out.